Last week when we did this, you were seething. You were Dragon Age Inquisition seething over this game.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 462, recorded on March 29th, 2017. And welcome to the 462nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 295th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Fowle.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, I have the date for my permanent move to LA. It's going to be June 4th, which is obviously going to be in time for E3. And hopefully the movie gods will be kinder to me there.
So I might be heading to E3 after all.
Oh, that's cool. Fortunately, I won't have to pay for a hotel since I'll be living there. That's the biggest perk right now for me. That, yeah, forget about hotel. I have a place.
Yeah, I still got to figure out that end.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, I can't let you crash with me because it's a twin bed and we'd have to be snuggly together. And... It's just
always the floor with a sleeping bag or something.
Oh, that's true. But I'm going to be bringing all my board games with me. So that's going to be a real... I have a lot of board games. Some big ones, too. Some heavy ones. I mean, Robinson Crusoe and Star Trek and my Battlestar Galactica and my Psy. They're all going to be really heavy.
Do you have friends to hang out with in L.A.?
Well, I'm going to be... What? What did you ask?
I think you have friends to hang out with in L.A.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be caregiving one of them, so yeah. I mean, you know, Paul moved from L.A. to Florida, so I missed that boat. But I have friends out there, yes. I go there on a yearly basis, so in this case, it's going to be permanent. So E3 starts June 13th. But all the, you know, it's weird. All of the big stuff is going to be starting on the 11th. That's when Microsoft's going to have their conference, and they're going to be showing off Project Scorpio. The word is that Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to be at the Sony conference. And I'm willing to bet you the main reason is that they're going to announce Red Dead Redemption Remastered for the PS4.
And this is sort of big for Rockstar, too, because until last year, they weren't showing up at E3, were they?
They did have something there, probably DLC for, you know, I know that 2K was there, not Rockstar, because they were showing off Mafia 3 and Civ 6.
Yeah, until Rockstar dropped their Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer last E3, they had not shown up at E3 for, I think, 7 years at least.
Yeah, and Switch is going to be at E3 for the first time. Zelda was, Switch wasn't. Just something they said, oh, this is the Switch, and they held up a box which looks nothing like what we actually got. So, what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been playing Yooka-Laylee. And I can't talk about it yet. It's under embargo, but it's fun.
Oh, okay. Well, the thing is that I backed Yooka-Laylee, so I'll be patiently waiting for my Xbox One version. So here's the thing about Yooka-Laylee, and this is nothing you have to embargo. It's Banjo-Kazooie. That's basically what it is. It's Banjo-Kazooie except with new characters.
Mm-hmm. And I can't say that like it's everything you would expect out of that.
It's a collectathon, but at least it's not an annoying collectathon. That's the entire point of the game, actually, is to be a collectathon.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever play Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts?
I did. I wasn't an enormous fan. Like, the whole driving aspect was silly to me, but it was interesting for what they tried to do differently with it.
Yeah. So what else have you been playing aside from stuff you can't talk about?
Let me think. League of Legends. They just redid one of the champions.
Okay.
And so I went and tortured myself by playing that game because I like to see how the new stuff works.
You know, one of our articles is about people changing stuff and pissing off the community, so there's your segue for that item.
Yeah, they changed Galio, who has been a long-time sort of magic tank, which is to say he has defenses against mages that make him useful, and he had this taunt for a while that would gather everyone's attacks onto him, and then right. He would release a blast against all of them.
Did they nerf him or buff him?
They completely redid his kit, so now he is more of a – he's still a magic tank.
Okay.
He's just like there are a bunch of different things about him that like he's got a global ultimate where he can jump to an ally and like it will up their defense until he gets there and then it'll knock everybody in the area up into the air, which is a great thing for him, which is a great thing for any initiating tank to have. But yeah, like. League of Legends is still the same. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, but it's interesting to see. If anything, Riot is good at what they're doing with their mechanics. It's just it's a shame that the community can't be better.
I can't really discuss it because I don't play any MOBAs at all.
Yeah, I mean,
if I was to play a MOBA,
the easiest one to possibly get into would probably be Heroes of the Storm from Blizzard, because that is a very simplistic version of a MOBA.
Oh, really? What about Monday Night Combat? Does anybody remember Monday Night Combat?
No.
I do. I have friends that tell me all the time that they're mad that didn't do as well as Overwatch has done, because it was pretty much the precursor to it in every way.
Yeah. There's also Awesome Knots, which is still going on, which is a 2D MOBA. It's a 2D platform MOBA, or run and gun, whatever. It's Super Smash Brothers meets MOBA. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
I completed the Dragon's Quest Builders, and I liked the ending. I think it had something interesting to say, and it was basically about freedom of choice and having an actual choice in your destiny. Because a lot of these games are, prophecy and destiny, this and that. And this is about choosing something else, even if it's extremely detrimental to the world or to you or to other people. So I thought the ending was really good. And, yeah, and the sandbox mode is pretty cool, too, where you can go out, explore, build wherever you want, and you can share your build and import. The import builds just automatically happen. You walk by and you'll see a zone that just updates and suddenly somebody's build from some random place just shows up and you get to explore and see what other people have built, so it's kind of neat. And I've also been playing Pillars of Eternity. I'm getting farther into that. Almost I've gotten halfway through the White March expansion, and it's like their own little Icewind Dale version of the game, and it's a lot of fun.
When is Pillars of Eternity 2 coming out again?
I think they have at least a year of development, maybe a year and a half.
So it's not like a rush to finish Pillars of Eternity so you can get ready for Pillars of Eternity 2.
But I wanted to complete it anyways,
How's have you been playing Torment?
Not yet. I'm going to finish up Pillars first.
Okay. Because that's also segueing into another news item we have. As for me, I'm playing a lot of Mass Effect Andromeda. And here's the thing. It's starting to grow on me. Some of the bad design choices, I'm just like, whatever. Because now I'm playing on narrative mode, which means I shoot it, it dies. So basically combat is very easy. And I may go back to normal combat. Now that one of the main problems of the game is that they don't really explain stuff very well. One of the design choices they made, which irritates the hell out of me, is that when you research and craft a mod, You get that mod, but then you can't craft it anymore. You have to find it in a store, and I can't find a lot of these mods in stores anywhere. And my thinking is, well, just let me craft more. But no, you can only craft it once, and boom, okay, you have to buy them now wherever you can find them. That makes no sense to me. I'm pretty sure it's a design choice, but here's the thing. When you're crafting a mod, you're generally going to put it in new armor right away, or new weapon right away, right? But it's usually not going to be your strongest weapon, because you're going to be able to craft better, what's it called, better weapons and armor. And all of a sudden, oh, I used that for the cheaper armor. Had I known, I would have saved those mods until I had the best armor I could possibly have and the best weapons I could possibly have, then put them in there, you know? Or at least wait until I can find more of those mods before I put them in new armor. I will say that you can swap out your Omniblade, and I got an Asari sword, and basically I modded it a bit. So what happens is that now you teleport spam when you attack somebody, which means you vanish, and then you appear in front of them and stab them. And since I did the highest level Asari sword, it's sort of like, okay, you're dead now. You got too close to me. You can also do an aerial attack with the sword and kill several enemies at once. And that's pretty fun. I also modded a sniper rifle, the Widow. And the problem is I gave it the wrong mod because I gave it a little missile. So now it's not an insta-kill when you snipe somebody. Now you have to wait for the stupid rocket to reach them. And since it's a single-shot rifle because it's powerful, I'm usually reloading before the missiles actually hit its target.
No.
And I can't confirm until I look through the sight again like 30 seconds later. I mean, I learned my lesson. I should reserve those for the pistols. There's one design choice I really like. Really, really like. Now, you know, in Mass Effect, you usually have pistol, submachine gun, assault rifle, sniper rifle, you know. In this, it allows you to put whatever you want in up to four slots, which means my guy's carrying around two pistols and a sniper rifle. So I have one pistol that has 300 rounds that shoots three off at a time and has one type of attack, and my other pistol is a hand cannon with 60 shots, and I use that for a different kind of attack. So it allows me to just to focus on pistols and sniper rifle, and it sort of makes you feel badass. Like, I have one pistol for one thing, another pistol for another thing, and for things far off, I use the sniper rifle. So that's really a good design choice, and I hope they use that for future Mass Effect games. The story's got me caught up. Unfortunately, there's a lot. It's MMO level of missions. And if I know anything about Mass Effect, is that you don't rush through the game. You want to do everything before you actually do the thing. Because if you don't do all the loyalty missions, and if you don't do all the little some of the side missions, you're not going to have a good ending. People will die. So I have that in my brain. But the problem is, it's like an MMO. There's so many missions. At least it's not pick up this many things. Kill this many things. There is some that's I go to these regions, but like I said, it's less annoying than Dragon Age Inquisition, because in that game you generally are melee and magic, and the combat gets really boring fast. But with Mass Effect, there's a lot of shooting and all that stuff. And now that I'm more, like I said, I'm enjoying a lot more without having to worry about combat. You know, it's fun when you're sailing along and all of a sudden you hit a game-breaking bug that won't let you finish the game. Fortunately, I saved before that thing. And it's not really a bug. It's like a mission that's very quirky that really annoys me. You have to listen to all the dialogue before what you have to scan activates so that you can scan it. And, you know, that's another reason why I'm being slow with the game, is that I'm just going to do everything else besides that mission, and by then they'll either have patched it, or I'll have a save game and I'll try it and see if I can do it without borking it. I'm pretty sure that's going to be one of the first things they patch to make sure that mission isn't buggy. And this is why I don't like Mass Effect being an open-world game. By the way, I looked at an article from January 27th that BioWare was insisting, Mass Effect Andromeda is not an open-world game. Reminds me of when they were claiming, no, Khan's not in Star Trek Into Darkness. You know, they lied. They lied outright. If Mass Effect Andromeda is not an open world game, I don't know what is. But like I said, the story's really grabbed me, and I want to see where this is going. Aside from the misstep, what I would have really liked to happen was that you don't know the language of the anybody there in Andromeda for a long while. Or maybe Sam, who is your little personal AI, translates everything for you after scanning where, so you're the only person who knows what the hell they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, another idea I had was that you're actually captured by the bad guys, but Sam prevents them from changing you. But you never quite are sure if you're still in control. You know, it's sort of like a beat and like, oh, well, they don't have indoctrination. They have exaltation, right? So, but, you know, but they mind fuck people first. So what happens is, is my brain really mine? Sort of like Bioshock, you know, with mm-hmm. would you kindly? That would have been a nice little twist. But though, you know, I mean, alien speaking English is, you know, fine. I mean, it was in the first three Mass Effects, but I just wish there had been a little more alien, because the first 30 to 45 minutes, everything is really, really alien, and you feel like you're in a place that is inhospitable. Like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, the polar opposite end of that was where, this is going to probably raise an eyebrow, but in No Man's Sky, there are several aliens, and you don't know their language, and the only way you discover their language is by finding these stones that teach you one word at a time. And as much as I don't like the idea of you just getting a language without some means, the slow crawl of learning one word at a time across separate planets was like, I just think of that and I think, well, there's two opposites to this. There's just giving you the language, or it's making you learn it, like actually learn it. And that feels painfully slow.
The one thing I do like are the Angarans, who are the resident species of the Helios sector. And, they realistically have a reaction to you, because the first alien species they met were the Ket, who completely invaded them and abused them. So they're naturally very emotional and open-hearted, but the Ket have made it so they can't really trust you that much. And there's a group called the Rokar who just want to kill you, you know, who are the Angarans, who think all aliens are bad, so destroy them all. And it's a major part of the plot, you know. But I like the way that they slowly open up, and it's up to you to see how they open up, you know, and all that stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of trust issues. So a lot of the relationships in the game are really good. And that's basically what's gotten me through the game, is finding out about this world, finding out about all these people, finding out, you know, what they're like and what your companions are like to a lesser degree. But really, the Angar are a very interesting species. Terraforming the worlds, fortunately they don't insta-terraform, you know, it's not like, oh, look, we turned this desert planet into a luscious tropic paradise. No. All the things that you're doing are going to take time, but at least you take away some of the major things. For example, on the first world you incorporate, which is called Eos, you remove the radiation for the most part. You know, mm-hmm. you take, you know, the other worlds, like the Krogan, where the Krogans ran off to. And once again, the Krogan are treated like crap by society, so they have their own little colony that you have to try and convince them to come back to. Their world is extremely hot, you know, and there's places where you can't go, and the sinkholes, you'll just burn up. I think what they say is, well, you know, the terraforming alien machine isn't going to make it all right. It's going to take a long, long time for there, say, to be water, you know. But until then, you're going to make it a little less inhospitable and all mm-hmm. that. One planet you meet has just been blown up. It's just in pieces like Mongo, you know, in Flash Gordon. So you really can't terraform that.
Yeah.
But it's entertaining me now. It's not great. It's good. And, you know, I generally avoid the internet's, you know, hyperbole. It's the worst thing ever. No, it's not.
Well, I was going to say, because, like, last week when we did this,
I was ranting.
You were seething. You were Dragon Age Inquisition seething over this game.
Well, and, I still have that feel, you know. They made a lot of wrong choices, but there's several things in its favor. Once, they spent a long time on this. So it's not like they didn't put effort into it. They just made the wrong design choices. And two, right. You know, I'm very familiar with the Mass Effect universe. Everything, you know, all the little stuff they talk about, I will know. Like, you meet Cassandra Werner. And she talks about her hero-worshipping brother. And I know instantly that's Conrad Werner, from, who's the blonde guy who's Commander Shepard's number one fan, you know. Mm-hmm. There's all these little things, you know, like when they mention small things. And the funny thing is they don't know that the it takes place, I think, just after Mass Effect 2. Mm-hmm. So, because one of the characters mentions about the stupid project that Cerberus is doing, which they're trying to bring someone back to life, Project Lazarus, which is basically how Commander Shepard returns from the dead. So I know that was going on when they left. So they don't know about the Reapers. Now, here's the thing. Cerberus knew about the Reapers, and I had this idea that the Initiative is actually a Cerberus project. I haven't gotten far enough into it. But they talk about a mysterious backer. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, oh, what if it's the Elusive Man? What if it really is Cerberus? So I haven't gotten to that mystery yet. And there's no spoiler there because I don't know anything. This is all speculation on my part. So there's a lot there to – and, you know, I don't know if it's going to make me want to play it over again like I did with 1, 2, and 3. But I do know that I'm really anxious to see where this story is going. Now, on the other hand, I've also been playing the Banner Saga for the first time, number one, because I got a code for one. I already had two, and the reason why they sent me it is that there's a new multiplayer version. I don't know, some DLC for Banner Saga 2. So I'm playing Banner Saga 1 for the first time, and you know I've been following the game since it was a Kickstarter project, but I never actually played it. I'm getting used to the combat, which is kind of strange, in which it really heavily deals with you have to break their armor to get to kill them. You know, you really have to, because a lot of your guys aren't going to be strong enough to you know get through that armor. So you have to whittle down the armor and then get the final blow. So that it's interesting. The art is great, obviously, because it was sold on the cel shaded, the cel animation. You know, and already it's asking me choices. I know the choices are going to get harder as I go along. I'm not all the way through yet, but like I said, I need to get this game over with so I can. But Mass Effect's been taking up all my time. Oh, that's the other thing about Mass Effect. It is not a short game. It says I'm 50 hours in, and I think I'm getting to the middle of the game. So, yeah. The game I've stopped playing is Torment because I'm concentrating on these two other games. I'm going to get back to it. I like where it's going. But we have other news, and you know what? We might as well jump right into the first news item. So go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Planescape Torment 4 4K Remaster comes out in April 11. This is from Polygon. The classic isometric role-playing game Planescape Torment is being remastered by Beamdog, a company best known for remaking other classic games based on BioWare's Infinity Engine. Called Planescape Torment Enhanced Edition, it'll be compatible with Linux, Mac, and Windows PCs, as well as iOS and Android devices. The game will be available on April 11th. The final product will include a completely remastered soundtrack and a 4K resolutions. The Enhanced Edition will also include a number of quality of life improvements to the user interface and camera, but those features can be turned off for the more authentic experience. The team at Beamdog has gone so far as to partner with the lead designer, Chris Avalon, to create gameplay updates, bug fixes, and enhancements to best capture his vision for the game. The original Planescape Torment was released in 1999, but the Planescape universe dates back to 1994. It's based on the cosmology of the Dungeons & Dragons universe and represents a realm where multiple planes of existence come together. The plot of the game centers on the Nameless One, a being on a quest to understand why it cannot die. Planescape's spiritual successor, Torment Tides of Numenera, was recently released. And I think this is interesting. I didn't know if they would enhance this one. I mean, I guess I'm not totally surprised, but it's nice to see that, and I'd like to see how well they do with it. I don't think I'll be getting it, though, because I think I have enough enhanced editions to play the original Planescape before buying an enhanced one.
Yeah.
I like that they're going to try to fix bugs. I don't think they got all the ones in the enhanced edition, so I think the pickpocketing one, where the pickpocketing the store owner and then selling them his own stuff back exploit is still in there.
Well, maybe they'll leave it in the classic, because they mentioned there's going to be, if you want to play it with the new enhancements, or you can play it as it was. You know, and we know Beamdog, they did the Baldur's Gate remastered, and they did Icewind Dale remastered, you know, so it was only a matter of time before they were going to set their sights on Planescape Torment.
Yeah, I just hope that they are still going to do a Baldur's Gate 3. I know that they want to, I just don't know if they're doing it.
When I think of, I'm glad that they're putting in like the original form of the game, because when I think of like a game that old in 4K, I mean, you can polish up the backgrounds as much as you want, but to a certain degree in 4K, that will always look a bit stretched, I think.
Yeah, it will. The conditions of Baldur's Gate do look a little stretched and a little blotchy, you know, because if you play Pillars, everything looks nice and fine and detailed. Then you go over to Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition, and there's like some pixelation, and figures are a little bit muddy, you know. And it's like this isn't it doesn't do well zooming up into the details when it wasn't that fine to begin with. So.
Well, you know, I think they are working on that because they're remastering the soundtrack too. You know.
Well, that is cool.
Yeah, by the way, there is a Baldur's Gate 3 being developed by Beamdog, so we don't know when that's coming out. I mean, it was announced back in 2015. But, you know, like, it's a lot harder to create an entirely new Baldur's Gate than it is just to remaster it.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah. I still have Planescape Torment. I haven't really finished it. And I, you know, it'll be interesting to see if I want to get the remastered version. I mean, like I said, I don't care about the 4K, just the 19800 by 720 will be enough for me, you know, the monitor size. Oh, no, I have 1440 by 900, that's right. So that's all I really care about.
Yeah, I don't really care about the 4K resolution. I don't think it's inundated enough, really, to focus on. You know, it'll be interesting to see if this brings up more interest for Planescape in general and Beamdog. And I mean, you can get the original, I know, on GOG.
That's where I got it from. I mean, I have the original copy too, but I bought the GOG version so it'll run on my computer. The one property I'm still waiting for, two of them, one is Hillsfar, and the other one is Spelljammer.
Hillsfar isn't on GOG? I thought they had all of them.
I don't know. That's the one they don't have. And Spelljammer is D&D in space!
Yes. I always loved how they came up with the idea how to put it in space. And
it's the Aether. Mm-hmm. It's the old 1800s concept of space being an Aether, you know? So they said, okay, we'll do it. And they also had the Ultima mod. I think it was an Ultima mod, maybe? I don't know which mod it was, but Mars 1889, and I don't remember, but I know they were mods for something. They were total conversions of a game. I think it might have been, I don't know, I forgot. For those of you out there who remember Mars 1889 and the other game, that let us know which one it was from. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
First Star Wars Battlefront 2 trailer dated for April. This comes from GameSpot. We'll learn the first official details about the sequel to DICE's Star Wars Battlefront in about 2 weeks' time, an EA announced today. Battlefront 2's first trailer will arrive on April 15th at 11:30 a.m. It will make its debut as part of a panel at Star Wars Celebration, aptly titled The Galaxy-Wide Premiere of Star Wars Battlefront 2. For those who aren't attending, it will be streamed online. EA has been teasing details about Battlefront 2 for almost a year now, having confirmed its existence last May. Since then, it's acknowledged criticisms of the first game, good, and repeatedly suggested it will be a larger, more in-depth game that features a single-player campaign. It'll also have content for multiple eras of the Star Wars franchise. Battlefront 2 does not yet have a release date or confirmed platforms, but today's announcement reaffirmed that it's slated for launch later this year.
You know, I hope they don't go in the opposite direction and make it another Battlefield game. You know, something unfriendly in which, oh, well, you died because a sniper got you. Oh, a sniper got you again. Yeah. Die every 2 minutes, or actually less. Die every minute because you keep on getting sniped. You know, I get it.
Yeah.
You don't want to make it too friendly, but also don't make it so that no one wants to play it except hardcore people. Are people still playing Hardline?
I mean, they're playing Battlefield 1, and I've heard those exact complaints that you just fielded about the game, where you can spawn and just get hit in the head immediately because the spawns aren't protected.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun at all.
Yeah, and like, it's to a certain extent, it's just like the battlefields are huge, so that's how they counter it, by just getting you out into a place where there is so much room and you can't like predict exactly where everyone's going to spawn every time. However, it still is sort of a game that caters to the hardcore base, and not to mention, like, I enjoyed Star Wars Battlefront, like, for its novelty, and I think to a certain extent, if you took all of that out in order to go hardcore, you know, like,
well, I like. Go ahead.
I don't want it to be arcadey. I don't want it to be like I'm just pointing in the general direction of a dude and the lasers are traveling to him. I want it to be have some modicum of skill, but it needs to not be ridiculous, I think.
I would like to see something that's more like Planetside, the first Planetside, because that was a lot of on the ground and in the air, a lot of stuff going on in different regions. That melds itself perfectly to the Star Wars universe. It's not going to happen, but that's what I would like to see. You know, oh, something's on Hoth. You got to go to Hoth, so you have to take the flight there. Then you can get a plane out there, you know, and all that stuff. Oh God, I forgot what I was going to say now.
They need to continue to make sure that, like, the main parts of the Star Wars franchise are fun. Like, playing as the heroes was pretty good in Battlefront, and it needs to continue to be that way.
So
playing as the special vehicles was great.
What I was about to say is that having a single-player campaign may give an indication of where the game is going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would play a Star Wars Battlefront single-player campaign. I mean, that would be fun. You get it assigned a character, and here's the thing. You know, that was fine that you can turn into Darth Vader or Han Solo or something like that at any point. You know, that's fine for multiplayer, but a lot of players, they want to be their own little badass in the Star Wars universe. They don't want to be one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know? A lot of people talked about Starkiller. I didn't want to be Starkiller. I wanted to be some anonymous schmo.
I hope if they're going over, like, they're talking about going more in depth with the eras of the Star Wars franchise. Like, how could they have missed the beat on including the Force Awakens characters in the game? Like,
because,
I don't understand that.
Because Disney said no. they were constrained by Disney, who did not want that. That's the problem.
Is that what happened?
Yeah,
they did the Battle of Jakku, but they wouldn't go ahead and put characters from it in there.
No, they needed the separation of the movie from the license, that spoiler territory. You know, I mean, maybe that'll. That's fine. I mean, I wouldn't mind being a character in the prequels, just so long as you don't have the story of the prequels. what would be interesting is if they actually went even further back to 4,000 years before the event, so you could have some Knights of the Old Republic.
That would be awesome. I would love, Darth Revan?
Yeah, I mean, EA owns Knights of the Republic. Remember, they still own that game license since they own BioWare. If Darth Revan, Darth Malak, Bastila, I think everybody would want to be Jolie Bindo.
Yeah, that would be really fun.
For those who don't know who Jolie Bindo was, he was the bald black Jedi with a white beard who kept on saying he's old and he's allowed to be cranky.
I think I'd like to see a game with Mace Windu. That would be pretty cool.
You have Jolie Bindo fighting alongside Mace Windu.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. World of Warcraft has changed how enemies scale, and players are very angry. Yeah, that's a big sort of shocker. There's a patch that angers a lot of people, especially in World of Warcraft. The big World of Warcraft 7.2 patch that went live yesterday made some significant changes to the game. Blizzard didn't mention one in the patch notes, a change to the way mob scaling works. Instead of scaling to a player's level, enemies now scale to the item levels. And based on the reaction of the Battle.net forum thread, people are not happy about it. It took a while, but game director Ion Hazzikostas eventually confirmed the change in a forum post of his own. He wrote, "Yes, this reflects a deliberate change, but it's also not working exactly how we intended. The scaling may be too steep, and the fact that unequipping a piece of gear can ever be helpful is a bug in the system. We're looking at making changes to correct this in the very near future. Power progression is essential a part of the World of Warcraft endgame, and the last thing you want to do is undermine that. We stress the importance of that level progression when discussing how the level scaling system worked in Legion around the time of the expansion's launch, and explain why we had no plans to scale foes' power based on gear. But as we've watched Legion unfold, we've come to observe that some side effects of our endgame content plan and the associated reward structure that made us reconsider." Hazzikostas said World of Warcraft's core mechanics, quote, "start to break down," unquote, once players move past a certain threshold, because they simply become too powerful for the game world to handle. They need to spend more time traveling and cleaning up than actually questing, and instead of using core class abilities, the focus shifts to, quote, "spamming instants to tap mobs as quickly as possible before they die," unquote. He also explained that very approximately how the new system will slow but not halt the power leveling process. He says, "perhaps instead of getting 400% stronger over the course of the expansion relative to the outdoor world, you only get 250% stronger. But you should always be getting more powerful in relative terms, and upgrades should always matter." As for why the change wasn't listed in the patch notes, that's where things get a little dicey. As Hazzikostas said that the new system, quote, "was meant to feel largely transparent and subtle, and Blizzard wanted players to experience it organically at first instead of focusing solely on the before and after differences." Unsurprisingly, that explanation has not gone over very well. His post is on page 26 of the thread. Less than 12 hours later, the thread has exploded past 125 pages. And while you can't really read them all, the most recent post at the time of this article is just as unhappy as the first. Quote, "this might be the stupidest idea since removing PvP vendors." So
this feels like a clumsy attempt to fix something that really wasn't fixable, because the issues he was describing were the issues I felt when I last played this game, and that was just after Burning Crusade. So, I mean, and several expansions have been out since then. And it's just, this is not a game that's really designed for questing. I mean, questing just seems to be like a side item. You just, you get through it, and you get into a guild, and you're given powerful stuff, and you just go out, and you're supposed to do PvP. That seems to be the main focus of this game, is player versus player arena battles.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll chime in to say that any given core player of games like these gets mad whenever anything happens to break their routine. Yep. And that's basically what happened here, was people had a routine with how they were leveling, and this came in and just basically changed everything that they had going. You can't use that same key binding that you used before. You can't use that same set of approaches that you used before. Got to come up with something else.
I just love it when a new expansion comes out and all the epic gear that you have is now junk. I haven't played World of Warcraft in years, but I never really did the endgame content. Then again, I never really got my guy hard enough. I wasn't really a fan of the PvP, and I always, quote-unquote, loved it when some guy, no matter what level, would throw one of those flags at me, which is basically, let's duel, you know, in the middle of town. It's like, no, thank you. I don't want to duel.
That sounds like me. I just didn't care about PvP. I ignored people that tried to challenge me, and I tried to do the quests, and it just became very apparent that the quests were just meant to be there to power you up or level you up until you could go do some PvP with people, and it just did not interest me.
What was really hilarious was, you know, when you're in town, especially even in the level one town, and actually it was more in the level one town, you'd have all these fights going on around you because people were just dueling. It's like there was a bar brawl in the middle of the street, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I did like swimming to harass the horde lower level thing and kill their vendors and leave again. And the thing is that I would kill them, all the other horde players would come after me, and I would just swim away. And they would not be able to catch up to me because I was just swimming in one direction. It's like they'd give up. And when they gave up, I would come back and kill their vendors all over again. That's what I did when I was bored.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that as well. Just some random horde come in, kill my the vendors at my little alliance place, and I wouldn't be able to do anything there, and I found that very annoying.
Oh, it's even more annoying when they kill a quest giver, because you finish your quest, they're dead. Oh, well, one thing I did was we actually wandered into horde territory, and one guy was doing an escort mission, right? So he swooped in and killed the guy he was escorting. And the orc yelled out, "Gak!" And I think that's WTF when the game translates. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. No one ever did that to me, thank goodness. But, you know, I had to find some fun somehow. I guess that's why I'm not playing it anymore. I mean, here's the thing. It's still free. It's free to play, limited now. I might as well jump in and see what's going on. I found my authenticator. I have to see what happened to my characters.
I watched a Let's Play of the Pandora expansion.
Pandora.
And it looked pretty much the same.
What's funny is that I keep on seeing... there was this guy who was talking about what ruined World of Warcraft. Saber... Oh, damn it. I forgot his name. He's a brony, but he also talked about... He also talks about other stuff. I forgot his name. Anyways, every time he has the Miss of Pandora box, it has Kung Fu Panda on it. It's like pose face on it. Because that's basically what it is anyway, but still, it was funny seeing that box. I don't know how serious it is, because I really can't gauge it, because A, I don't do PvP. B, fans tend to go hyperventilate every time there's any sort of change. I will admit, though, I was really annoyed when they nerfed a lot of the quests, the priest's abilities, because no one was taking priest, and the paladins were doing everything the priest could do, so no one needed us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why be a priest when you can be a paladin? Do all the same stuff. I mean, what they should have done was make priest only ones who could res somebody. At least that would make us useful.
And they nerfed priests even further after that?
I don't know. I stopped playing. I just know that I was really useful in hypnotizing monsters in a dungeon to get past them. And it wasn't an exploit. That's what the damn spell was for. I was the same level as them, you know. Let us. You gave us the tools to do this. Let us use them. Don't take them away when we actually use them.
Mm-hmm.
It's stuff like that that just, you know, I don't know. I should have complained to Gil, but I didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, yes, there is a hyperventilating fan base, like I said, that hates when their routine is broken. However, at the same time, I mean, look at this here. They're obviously figuring out exploits for it.
Just take the stuff off.
Yeah, if you can take off a piece of gear and it makes an enemy weaker, that's a pretty big deal.
Oh, boy. I don't mind, because here's the exploit, is that you just have power gear on characters that can barely use them. So just make it smarter, you know. This is like the YouTube thing, you know. You have to have some intelligence behind it. You just can't blunt force it. Take into account the guy's level. Take into account his gear. And... you know, if the gear is way higher, then yeah, make the creatures harder. But here's the thing: if they take it off, guess what? Those creatures don't go down in level. Keep that gear on if you're going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when you first enter and make them go up when you put it on, though, so that you can't make them weaker, but you can make them more powerful. Yeah,
I can't imagine how hard it would be to work with the kind of code that would actually lock into a certain stat once a certain player arrives there.
You know, it's just
nightmarish and a mess.
World of Warcraft still has like what 7 million people, so that's a metric fuck ton, but still, you know.
I think that's a great tagline that Scott just came up with for World of Warcraft.
What?
Nightmarish and a mess.
It'll probably be the next expansion. Hey, this is the game that actually players pay $25 just to have a new mount that does nothing except look different. And it wasn't like they were tricking them into buying it. They said, this is it. This is $25. This is all it does. And people said, yes, we want it. That's how devoted people are to World of Warcraft.
Wow. There's a demand for every product, it seems.
Yeah, I just want Dark Ages of Camelot back. That was the game for me. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Destiny 2 officially announced, teasing the fall of the last city from GamesRadar. Bungie has officially announced Destiny 2 via a tweet that might confirm the fall of the last city and a possible direction for the sequel. The image seems to show the Traveler eclipsing the moon, or sun, and the last city on fire. Pretty dang apocalyptic, then. Has the darkness finally arrived, or is there something nefarious underway within the tower, which seems to have fallen? Previously, we had a Megablocks Destiny 2 leak suggesting that the last surviving human settlement might be in trouble. One of the descriptions for the playset stated the following, quote, "A legendary warrior faces his greatest contest yet in the tower hangar. Wielding his Ray's lighter, hero of the Crucible Lord Shax prepares to pit his blade against the furious cleavers of a Cabal Red Guard." The idea of Cabal in the tower is not something we've encountered yet, and the last city falling to start off Destiny 2 has been building pace. The game needs a reason to explain why Destiny 2's guardians won't be able to keep their Destiny 1 gear. The possibility the Traveler might not be a good guy has been around as long as the game itself, so seeing it hanging over the burning remains of humanity's last stand isn't a huge surprise, although the Cabal are currently the main suspects for the attack.
It's called the Bag of Spilling.
Oh,
guys.
Destiny.
It's called the Bag of Spilling. You know, you've seen this in Castlevania. You start with this huge kit, and oh, guess what? It's all taken away, and now you're weak. Here's the thing. Destiny, the original Destiny, was screwed by Activision because they slice it up like a pizza and did the Mona Lisa effect, which Scott loves to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if Destiny 2 is going to – maybe if Activision noticed that. Yeah, Destiny didn't get the biggest best reception, and maybe they're going to let Bungie do what they want to do this time around.
All I got to say is Destiny 1, shame on you. Destiny 2, shame on me.
Well, here's the thing. I haven't played Destiny, but the what is it called? The Taken King. A lot of people swear up and down that the Taken King vastly improved the game. So.
Yes, I have heard that too.
It's possible, you know, and this is what I wanted from Destiny. A Halo MMO. That's all I wanted. It didn't have to have the Halo name, just be a Halo MMO.
What it was a Diablo game without any of the cool context.
It was a Diablo game with only one real location. I mean, the thing was, we were supposed to hop around the solar system. What did we do in first Destiny? The moon, Earth, and I think Mars?
Yes, and Venus.
And we never got to Saturn. We never got to Jupiter. We never got to Pluto. We never got to anything like that. Expand the damn game. You know, that's what people wanted. People want it, you know, and here's the thing. You know what I'd love to do? To have factions to have control over planets. Mm-hmm. You know, like this player faction is controlling Mars now, you know, and you have to fight over Mars. You know, give them a reason to want to get all that gear. Also make the gear better, because that was one of the things that shocked me about Destiny, was that the guns and all the armor was boring.
Yeah, give me a game that doesn't make me yawn while I'm having to grind through it for, like, fucking 30 hours.
you know, have a crafted experience. You know, have a single-player, multiplayer experience. And you know what I'm talking about, in which you're it's a single-player game, but in a large room of other players who can join you if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking of that mechanic of resetting a player's, like, imported character and resetting their stuff, I like the way Trails in the Sky, Legend of Heroes did it, where in the first game you have this battle disc that you put your – it's like you have materia, and you put your materia in it, and you get your spells and abilities. Well, in the second one, you get an upgrade to it, but all your materia in the first game is now – does not work with this stuff, so you have to get new materia for this new battle disc, and you'll get new abilities, but you have to restart at the beginning with this new disc. And I thought that was a really clever way of doing it, and not just, oh, you know, some demon sucks all your weapons away or something.
You know what Batman Arkham did? It did not think of that. You kept the weapon, the items that you did in the first game, and you started with them in the second game. And it makes sense, because basically some of the stuff that he used in the first game wouldn't be useful. So Batman has Alfred send him some stuff that would be useful in Arkham City, and so on and so forth. So even there, you didn't even, you know, here's the thing. It could be like the Borg. Maybe just allow you to keep those weapons, but the weapons don't really work well against the enemies that you're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to ditch them at some point, because these new enemies say, oh, is that all you got? Watch this.
Yeah, and then in some cases, he took some of the gadgets that he had and he upgraded them with new capabilities.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm keeping an eye on Destiny 2. I hope it's what I wanted. One thing, and a lot of people want this, they also want a PC version, because that was one of the biggest gripes when Destiny came out. They kept on teasing a PC version, never happened.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, the game would be perfect for PC.
Yeah, it really would. Like, it has all the builds for that. It has, I mean, it's pretty much, it's not too far different from what Borderlands was anyways, so there's no reason it wouldn't work on PC for any reason.
It's also not
that I can think of.
Too far away from what The Division is. So, I don't know. I'm keeping an open mind in Destiny 2, because it still is Bungie. They know what they're doing. Let's hope that Activision's hands are off them this time around, so that maybe Bungie went, see? By the way, one of the interesting things is that an update in The Division actually had your robot briefly use Peter Dinklage's voice again.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure Nolan North will be coming along. So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You can use your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am Jonah Falcon, at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am TJ Denzer, at Johnny Chugs.
I am Scott Alphashard at I am Scott Dirk at Alphashard.
Cool. So, like I said, pretty slow week. Watch this tomorrow. There's going to be some huge news dropping or something like that. Half-Life 3 announced.
I will say this. Something dropped a little bit ago that you might be interested in, Jonah. BioWare officially responded to all the feedback they got, and they announced that there's going to be something coming on April 14th.
That's kind of far away for a broken mission.
But it is basically them saying, quote, "It's been a week since we officially launched Mass Effect worldwide, and we couldn't be more excited for our fans. We've received quite a bit of feedback, some of it positive and some of it critical, obviously."
feedback, that's what they're calling it now, feedback.
"That feedback is an important part of our ongoing support for the game, and we can't wait to share more of our immediate plans with you on Tuesday, April 14th.
I just want them to make it to fix the mission bugs. That's all. That's all I want. You know, the way you can't really fix the way you design the game. That's the only issue I had with it. You know, the only thing you do is fix the bugs. There's some hilarious bugs in it. Like one of my characters just froze and just stayed there and did nothing. Another one duplicated himself. There were two of them in the room intersecting with each other during the conversation. It looked like a body horror, you know. So there's a lot of – but here's the thing. That's what happens with open games. You have that those kind of bugs. Like in Red Dead Redemption, remember the donkey lady that you could ride?
Yes.
So that happens in these games. A lot of the fun of what people have are breaking the physics. Like most of Far Cry, Just Cause is exploiting those physics. That's also a lot of Grand Theft Auto 5. You know, people have fun doing that. But when you have a
Redemption, I had a horse show up on top of a pharmacy sign. I don't know how it did it, but it was just hilarious to see.
Spawning is one of the things, and that's one of the things that happened in Mass Effect Andromeda. I was killing them so fast, the enemies were appearing out of thin air. You know, I was their spawn point. The game didn't realize that I was near their spawn point, so these enemies were just appearing out of thin air. They're like, hi, it was a monster box was right there. So yeah, I mean, that's. The thing I really want from Mass Effect is a crafted experience. You know, open world does not allow you to craft things. But that said, the story has me hooked. I want to see how it ends. I can forgive bad gameplay mechanics after a while. The only thing I want are catastrophic bugs out of the game. You know, that doesn't allow you to finish the story. And it'll be interesting to see where they go with the next game after Andromeda. If they change it, that it's once again like Mass Effect 2 or 3.
I will say this about BioWare. For better or for worse, they do listen. And I think that when we whatever's coming on April 14th, I don't know that it's going to be drastic, but it's definitely going to be substantial.
Yeah. Well, like I said, all I want are quest bug fixes, you know. And there's nothing, like I said, there's nothing they can really do because the way they built the game is the way they built the game. I'm willing to bet you they're going to announce some new DLC, which I'll be all for. I'm glad I didn't get the extreme, because here's the thing, I still don't like, you know, I'm willing to bet you 90% of what they're going to be fixing on April 14th is going to be multiplayer stuff. Because the multiplayer sucks, and it could be improved through a patch, you know. Mm-hmm. That's probably what they're going to be doing, I'm pretty sure. One of the things I like, though, is that I don't have to do the multiplayer to level up in multiplayer. I just set a strike team from my console, and I'm leveling up, you know. That's a nice little surprise. You want to level up, we'll let the computer do it for you.
Yeah.
The thing is that no matter how much you level up that way, you're still not improving in terms of shooting. You know, it's sort of like cheating on the test, but then, you know, you didn't really learn anything from the test. You still have to play the multiplayer to get good at it, but right now it's not good. So maybe I'll try and get back into the multiplayer after that patch. That I can wait for. Anyways, we will talk to you later. That was stupid. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.